Today's episode is brought to you by Live Forever Golf. If you like living forever and you like golf, then you're going to love Live Forever Golf. Enter discount code LFG20 for 20% off your next order.
Live Forever Golf, for the player, not the game.
But I wouldn't say I always had the best attitude, but like, you know, when you start teaching, you also have to do it. So like, there's no doubt that you can work at it, right? I mean, you can think that you're lucky or you can think you're unlucky. Well, I decided to say that I'm the luckiest golfer there is, so...
All right, welcome back to another episode of Straight Down the Middle-ish. We are joined today by a very special guest, the inventor of the perfect putter and one of the PGA Tour's top short game coaches out there, Ramon Bisconza. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Exciting.
Golf clap arrival. I love it.
I'm excited that you're here. I'm trying to pick up a few tips today.
Right. You and me both. Yeah, you the chipping, me the putting.
Yeah.
I've seen you putt and chip. I don't believe it.
But we are excited that you're here, Ramon. You've always just kind of oozed charisma to me. I don't know what it is. There's a lot of it on the couch right now. I mean, Aaron just walked in looking like a bottle of sex.
Straight from work.
Straight from work. I mean,
geez. Says he's selling houses. I don't know about that.
Real jobs these days.
So you come to the States to, was it Ledbetter Academy or IMG? Same thing.
Yeah, it was IMG Academy, but... It was called Ledbetter, and I came here in 97. I was supposed to be here for 1 year, just kind of, okay, my parents wanted to send me somewhere to learn English. I didn't speak any English, and okay. I was like, I had a couple friends that were here, and I was like, how about this golf academy? I mean, at the time, it was very small. It's not what it is right now.
And they don't just take any kind of chop. I mean, what was there, like an application process, or how do you get into that academy?
I don't remember. Honestly, I was so young.
Golf then, or were you playing tennis, or...?
Only golf. I mean, there was only 20 kids on the golf program. So I mean, it was mostly like high, like better players, like, you know, David Gossett was there, like Ty Tryon, Crystal Grayling, like a lot of really good golfers. So we went there for a year, and then that was supposed to be it. And kind of Ledbetter and my instructor, Kevin Conley, convinced me to come back and graduated high school from there.
So 23, 25 years ago, come over high school, IMG Academy, obviously a great player. Fast forward all the way to now, you're the putting coach for, I don't know how many guys on the PGA Tour and Live. So you're 15, 20, and then you got mini tours. I don't know how many. There wouldn't be another putting instructor on earth that has more high-end clients than Ramon. So that's not that well-known to the public, but should has a cool story and good to get to know you through the next hour and just – all the little secrets you have of players and also like technique and stuff.
I want to dive into, I'm familiar with your playing career, but at what point were you like, all right, this is enough? And then how far from that point to the perfect putter? Like, what was the time in between there?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the story, I mean, looking back, it's kind of crazy, right? Like, I mean, when I came here, I didn't know how good or bad I was at golf. You know, like right now it's so easy to get information. You know, I used to get beat by, you know, Sergio all the time. I mean, it was like, I'm like, well, I'm this guy is just so much better. But like coming from a small country in Spain, you know, I thought that I would be coming to the US and it would be a lot more difficult, right? I mean, if Sergio's beating me this bad, like it's not going to be, when I get to the US, it's going to be, but it actually kind of worked in my favor, because I was like, okay, well, Sergio is like the best, one of the best amateurs ever, and he was unbeatable. So that's kind of like, you know, I came here, junior golf, college, then I played professionally for 9 years and, you know, never really reached my potential, I thought. And I was kind of convinced that I wanted to step away, but I loved the game so much that I wanted to stay around the game. And I broke my left hand skiing. So it's just kind of, you know, it was kind of like, okay, well, now, I mean, it's almost like a sign. Like, it worked on my favor. That was 2011. So I played for 9 years right out of college. And then that happened. And the perfect putter, we created it with my dad, right? We created about 2007. So I used it. We created it just for my personal use. We weren't planning on, you know, selling it or you know, it was something for my use to get better at padding. So, you know, 2007, we created, I used it for 3-4 years just myself, and people used to look at me funny. Like,
so you just roll up to a tournament and just bust that thing out. What was the
It was, I mean, people would look at me weird for sure. And you know.
So the thing in the bowling alley.
And it took a lot of personality at times. I didn't use it all the time, to be honest, because I was, it was, you know, like almost like.
People start asking questions and it probably gets annoying.
Yeah. So that kind of, but I mean, I saw the benefit. I saw the benefit of how much it helped me. And once that happened and, you know, I knew that I was not going to keep playing.
Yeah.
I was like, well, let's, you know, there was enough interest from players and instructors about it. So I was like, oh, how about we, you know, we show it to players. And that was kind of crazy. That was about 2012. And
for 10 years. So roughly how many units have you sold, do you think?
I will say, can I say this real quick about the Perfect Putter?
It's awesome.
It is awesome. And it is in every guy's arsenal. There's two things that every tour player has: some kind of launch monitor device, TrackMan, whatever, and a Perfect Putter. I mean, literally, and you know what? Everyone paid for those.
They pay for them. I'm not giving away, which is a good thing, which says everything. Honestly.
Yes, it does. It does. It backs up the product.
It was difficult, you know, like, you know, obviously being, you know, in the golf business and starting out and you know, like all the pros want everything for free, but we were starting out. It was, you know, it's a very expensive product to make, especially early on, right? So we make everything in Europe and I was like, well, I mean, if 200 guys want a Perfect Putter, that's going to be a lot of money. I don't have that money to, right. You know, yeah, being given away. So yeah, we try to be consistent with everybody. Obviously, through the years, we've given a lot of product away. But
so you and your dad created it. How was this concept really born and then built?
It was mainly for green reading. I mean, it was mainly for, you know, like I always wanted to be better putter. Like, and my dad always saw me working on technique. You know, I used to use the Dave Pales, the two pebbles, and, you know, I would get it through like no problem. And, you know, I would have a bad putting round and I go to the putting green and pull that out, right? So, you know, my dad saw that we needed to get better at green reading. I agree. And he's like, my dad's an engineer. So
unbelievable for green reading. It'll blow high level golfers' mind once you start. Because a lot of people go, oh, two cups right. But they're actually aiming four cups right. And the break is four cups right. But it's obviously makes sense to try and pair that closer from two cups to four cups. Get your eye line trained. I know, I've done some work with Chris Kirk.
No doubt. I think, I mean, that's the biggest benefit of the device. I mean, a lot of people use it for, you know, to set up drills and stuff. That's great. But I think, you know, using it and actually getting information on how you're reading it. Okay, I'm seeing this ball, a ball out, roll the ball and see the ball missing the cup by a couple cups. Like that really opens your eyes and it shows you that you need to put in some work on green reading.
Because if you think about it, if you're aiming, okay, it's two cups, Dad, or whatever, and it's really four cups, and your putter is actually aimed four cups because otherwise you would miss it low. And if you're talented enough, you know how to just get it done. But wouldn't it make sense to be looking four cups? So then you have your eyes trained.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a process, isn't it? Like you don't just do it all in one day.
Yeah. Every player is a different story. I mean, it's crazy how everybody works a little bit different, but yeah.
Who's your favorite guy you've worked with so far? That's kind of taught you stuff.
That's a difficult question, but it's tough. Obviously, you know, Roberto Diaz was the first guy I ever worked with. Like when I started it, you know, when I was still playing, like
so talented,
like when I was still playing, like I was like, okay, let me like, I know I want to get into coaching. Like, let me coach you, you know?
But, yeah.
Because I enjoy the coaching aspect. I mean, obviously they see me as short game instructor, but like I do everything and I like the coaching aspect. So Roberto, and then I've been very fortunate with Harris English. Harris English was the, you know, the first guy that brought me on board. Like when I was not even a putting instructor, I was just kind of showing him how I was teaching other players, but nobody, you know, that caliber at the time. He was a top 30 player in the world. And he's like, hey, I love the product. I went to show him the product. I love the product, but I love what you teach. I want to bring you on board. And I was like, all right,
let's go. From the Perfect Putter became, obviously you're showing instruction 7-8 hours a day. You're seeing a lot of putting strokes. You're a good player. You're a great putter. So from there, it made sense. Like it's, if people ask in a pro-am for a lesson, like we don't look at swings all day. The guys coaching do. So you were looking at putting strokes every day. So subconsciously, you were gaining so much knowledge. It just made sense to start teaching guys actually how to putt.
No doubt. And I mean, and kind of, you know, with Harris, it was crazy, right? Because I mean, he, you know, he was already a really good player, top 30 in the world. Like, but he had a beautiful stroke. So when I first saw, like worked with him, like all I did was just like set up drills for him, like just help him practice, like keep him accountable,
I think that's one of the biggest things that gets overlooked. Like, guys at the highest level don't really know how to practice still.
Yeah, which is because it's a difficult sport. Like every other sport, like you know, you're a basketball player, the practice is set up. Like you're coming to work and you're going to put in the work. In golf, you're just like, okay, well, I'm going to go practice. And some days you're not going to get the maximum of your practice. But if you had somebody there, it's like, okay, I got this set up for you, this, you put in the work and actually your technique will get better just by.
And the perfect putter also shows you, remember the study that you were telling me about back in the day at San Jose, like a 10 footer at 7 a.m. does not roll like a 10 footer. The same putt at 5 p.m. Just the imperfections of the greens. You need to teach people to like, hey, here's the percentages of 10 footers for the final five groups on Sunday. And then, you know, here's the first five groups out on Sunday. It's a lot of stuff that pros, like the top 50 guys in the world, don't even understand. So you miss a 10 footer and you're giving yourself, oh, I should have made that. Well, statistically only 42% or whatever the number is. So that's the part too. And then also you got different personalities, like everyone from Chris Kirk to Harris English. Some guys just need something worded differently or like a placebo. And other guys need to stand there and just hammer out a drill for like an hour.
No doubt. No.
That's got to be crazy to me.
What happens when you get a guy that comes on board and he's super raw? Like, because, you know, everyone's different. Are you still working with Abe?
Yes.
Okay. Abe Answer, my favorite short game in the world. It looks like it's never been touched by anyone. It's like, it's his. You know what I'm saying?
No doubt. I mean, he's homemade.
Exactly. So how do you come in and keep it homemade? There's got to be a fine line there.
You know, obviously, like personalities have to match, right? Like everybody that comes to me, I feel like they have a good understanding on how I like to work. I mean, if you're looking for somebody to like redo your technique and like get really technical, I'm probably not going to be the right guy. Of course, I do work on technique, but you know, I'm probably not going to be the right guy. With Abe Answer, how we started, I mean, he's been self-taught. He's never had a swing instructor.
Right.
So with him, like obviously his putting was not great. Obviously, that's why we first started working. But I think our personalities and the way I got him to work match because we kept it pretty simple. It was more like, okay, let's understand like what you do when you putt your best. Let's measure everything out, and you know, let's just same thing as Harris. Like let me make you practice, make you a better putter.
Did you practice the way you preach? I mean, you got your way into working with these guys through a device, right? You earn their trust, but now you're implementing all these techniques you learned to make them better players.
Big time. As a player, I mean, like once I started using, you know, the perfect putter, like my putting just like completely, like it was a big change. Like it opened my eyes. Like I did so many studies just rolling balls and understanding, okay, like what Aaron was saying before, like understanding, okay, this putt, you know, although it's eight feet, it's downhill, you know, it's got 3% slope, like, but it's a very sensitive putt. So like my expectations started being proper and I started understanding I could miss putts, you know, just like hitting a perfect putt, I could still miss a putt. So like understanding, like, so when I started teaching 100%, like I had, you know, the trust that, you know, this, the way I started practicing worked.
It's sort of hard to explain without having the device here, but like an uphill right to left from 8 feet, you can make it at like two or three different speeds. An 8 footer downhill left to right, even on like a 1 or 2% gradient, you could probably make it on like between like one speed.
Yeah, super speed.
So it's crazy to even understand that. Like, okay, I got an uphill right to left, or I can hit this hard, I can hit it soft. Downhill left to right, you need to have like the appropriate pace. Just all that stuff is what blew my mind. And it's just this, you would say it wouldn't be simple to make, but it's a pretty simple device.
Oh,
so I was just rolling the ball down and there was nothing on the market like that. The funny thing is when I'm setting up, I caddy a little bit for Chris Kirk every now and then, and Chris works with Ramon. But every time I'm setting it up, everyone in the crowd's like, is that a stimp meter?
Yeah.
Everyone thinks it's a stimp meter.
What are the greens rolling at?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But I was like, no, this is the best thing ever if you want to get better at putting. And I say that, and you know, I'm not here to market your product or anything, but it is. It's for a 27 handicapper or the best golfer in the world can get so much data from just rolling the ball down, like standing there thinking what you think the putt is going to break and then rolling it down that line.
No doubt.
I bought one. I'm still waiting for it to.
Yeah, it comes with
a lesson. I need to get mine out. Mine's
it comes with a lesson.
Heck yeah. I need to learn how to use it.
Mine's in the back of my car. I went and saw Ramon in 2019. And this is just a testament to what an idiot I am. And the next week, I finished tied for second and just made, you know, I made more putts.
And then you're like, I've got enough information.
I had been. Then I was like, oh, I'm never going to putt bad again.
How crazy is it?
It's so stupid. It's so dumb.
I wish somehow you could best goal from the world.
It can take a lot for some players to ask for help.
I'm never going to make a birdie yet.
Right. When it's good, it's good. Ron, I want to talk about Ryder Cup. You were at Whistling Straits, and I was thinking, man, that's got to be the first time a coach from Europe is on Team USA. Like,
no, it can't be.
No, not the first time, but
no. No way.
No, but
so maybe first putting coach that sells the perfect putter.
Right. Like, what is that feeling like?
Nah, it was an amazing week. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm European, you know, I grew up in Spain. So I would say it's been a couple of Ryder Cups that, like, I love the US. I've been in the US forever. So, like, what more do I have in my life? So I would say the last couple Ryder Cups have been, you know, I've been pulling for the US, and to be a part of the last one with Harris was, I mean, something I'll never.
There's something about, like, the Ryder Cup, President's Cup. Even you see it at the Zurich, there is something about when guys have played so many years without the team aspect that, you know, the Ryder Cup, they're playing for no money. Mm-hmm. Like maybe a few hundred, a couple of 20 grand or something goes to a charity. I don't know. But to see the passion that comes out of that is cool.
Well, it's the passion, and it's the eyeballs too. You know, everyone in the world is in the golf world is watching you that week. I mean, you're the only show in town. Yeah.
It's pretty cool, the camaraderie. I mean, you see, you know, everybody getting along so well. So
yeah,
but it's wild that so many have given up their spot on the team and the legacy of those teams. Henrik Stenson joining LIV and losing his captaincy. I mean, that's like a lifetime achievement award that you're just throwing away. It's
everything's individual though. Henrik's, whether it's documented or not, has had some of his fortune taken away from him a couple of times. Not sure if it's public or not, and maybe this was his chance to get back. I don't want to speak for him, but you never know what goes on a guy's brain. I'm sure he didn't make that decision easily, but I'm guessing if he was allowed to do it, he would do it. It wasn't his decision.
Right. I think he probably wants to do it, but he also wants that money. You know, hey, I'll still do it, but I'm gonna get this money too.
And Ramon, you're in an odd position having players on both tours, but it's, I don't know, I'm trying to find the right.
How are you handling it? Obviously, there's not too much to handle. You have clients, you go there. And
yeah, I mean, it's a difficult situation, right? I mean, you can have the way you think, but you know, at the end of the day, I've been working with Harold and Abraham Answer for such a long time, and that's my job, is to, you know, help them to be the best they can be, and they're very happy with their decision, and you can't blame him.
And you're not on an island out there. I mean, there's tons of guys in your spot where like reps now. I mean, these guys who TaylorMade, Titleist, Callaway, they all have their reps, but the big guys that are with those companies, they have like their individual reps, like Keith with Dustin at TaylorMade. It's like, what goes on now? Do you just go to the live events off the radar? I mean,
Horschel said it best. It's like, it's not a big deal that everyone understands, especially the guys who are affected who are actually playing. There's some other issues that have gotten blown out, guys wanting them to come back or going back on their word. But I think the whole coaches, I don't see too many issues.
I don't either.
It is, you get the odd comment or something. I'm sure.
How often are you turning away work? Like I know coaches will, when they have the luxury to be picky, they start getting picky out there. And
I mean, it's tough, obviously, because I also, for me to do my best job, yeah, I can't have too many guys, right? So, and I got to be fair to, you know, the guys that have been with me forever. And so on the PGA Tour, I try to stay with seven. Starting the year, you know, I think seven is a good number. It's rarely that all seven will be playing the same event. So, because if I had seven in one event, it would be very difficult.
So would you do a thing where, like, you got seven guys on the road, but then say a guy's like, hey, Ramon, I really want to work with you. And you say, hey, you know, I don't, but can you come to San Jose for?
Exactly. Yeah. It's rare that I'm not going to work with somebody. Right. Like, I mean, just, I might not take them off for the whole year, but whenever I'm home, I'll be.
Yeah.
Especially, honestly, I'm sure there's an unpaid element. It's like, oh, I think I can help this guy. Oh, this guy seems striping it, hitting good, and he's come up to me and it's like, look, I've got seven guys, so I can't, but next week I've come to San Jose, or hey, next week I've only got four guys I can fit you
in.
Yeah,
exactly.
But there's got to be that element of like, man, I really think if this guy learns how to read putts or understands the data to give himself a break. There's so many good players.
Three of the guys, your main guys that you've talked about, Abe, Harry, and Harold, are all just world-class iron players. I mean, so they're getting a ton of looks. Is there any correlation with good iron play and bad putting?
Psychology, of
right?
Course.
That's what I'm saying. If you have 15 feet on every hole, you're not gonna. If you made all of them, it wouldn't be fair. You'd be number one in the world.
If you look over the years, this is crazy. Of the top 10 greens and reg, right? Not proximity to hole because that's a better one, but forever it was greens and reg. So many of those guys don't stay on tour. Jeff Gover's tons, right? Because they have so many looks.
That's a bad example.
No, but there is. But Jeff Gover was a great ball striker, but he had so many looks. It gets in your head. That's why I think people like Vijay Singh need to be applauded. They miss more birdie putts than anyone. And psychologically, it's the last shot on every hole.
I hear you. It'll wear you out. It'll wear you out. I'd rather be a shitty ball striker and a great putter the other way around.
No doubt. You just got to drive it well and putt it well.
But when a guy hits it in the left rough, chunks one out, hits a poor 30-yard pitch shot to 12 feet and misses it, what does he blame? The putt.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound. Did I read Jeff Gove? Like people who ace hit. Look at the stats. I was always
Jeff Gove played on tour like maybe 15 years ago.
But he was always like third, fifth. He went back and forth.
First and Gers and just.
But he was. But he had so many putts and it gets in your head. That's what I'm saying. Vijay Singh and these ball strikers need to be commended for their mental aptitude for staying with it because it'll drive you insane. Well, you blame the putt. You don't blame anything else because it's the final putt. It's the only shot that gives you the score unless you chip in. Your driver doesn't give you score. 5-iron doesn't give you any score. Nothing gives you score except for the putter.
All right, Ramon, what do you think? Do you think there's a correlation?
There's a very valid point. I think, I mean, you see it all the time, right? Like, you know, guys like Sergio, like he's known for being a great putter, but like he's been a great ball striker. Even with stroke game putting, like I think right now that's probably the best that you can get for putting. Like still the best iron players are not going to be, you know, they're not going to be the best putters. Like it's very rare, like, because it's a lot more difficult to make a 20-footer than it is to make a 6-footer after you miss the green, right? So you hit it to 20 feet and you have a day that you don't make any putts. Well, every 20-footer, you're losing 1.5.
Yeah, people think Adam Scott's a bad putter, right? He's not a great putter from like 4 to 8 feet. Outside 10 foot, he's an amazing putter.
Right.
Without looking, I bet he's top 20. So people go, he's a bad putter. He's like, well, how many putts does he have outside 10 feet and how many putts does he have from 4 to 8 feet? So overall, he's a good putter.
Camilo, when he first got on tour, you know, I played in college with him a few years and I remember him making everything. And then he got on tour and he had a good year and all of a sudden he'd get on TV in the hunt and he'd miss a little one under the pump.
But it'd be on TV.
Yeah.
And everybody loves watching those short misses.
Right. And it was like he got this rap is that this was a crutch or, you know, an issue. And I was thinking, what? This guy is like the best putter ever. Like,
yeah, no, it's, I mean, putting is, I mean, there's a mental
attitude. As
well. Attitude, I mean, it's huge. Right?
Strokes gained attitude.
Yeah, Peter Monatti. Is he a good putter? He's the best, one of the best, right? Because a lot of it is attitude. Like
big time.
But I became a very poor putter, and most of it was my attitude because I would get on the Sam Putt Lab, which you've used, and my numbers were.
I'm going to say.
Better than most.
There is some kind of correlation between strokes gained hybrids and strokes gained attitude. I'm just telling you, the guys at the top of the hybrids category have a great attitude. I just know it. It's also with IQ and driving distance. There's also a correlation in there too.
I thought of it that way. Yeah.
Oh wow. We're gonna have to do some deep diving here.
Yeah. Ramon has, speaking of attitude, probably the most positive attitude of any human being I've ever met on a golf course.
Well, thank you.
And you have, I know you caddy for guys on the PGA Tour. You're caddying for guys that are junior elites. Having a guy like you on the bag has got to be huge.
Well, it's the same thing as Aaron. I hear he's the best caddy. He's
he is positive. He's the opposite of how he was playing.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? I'm insecure? Probably.
No, but I wouldn't say I always have the best attitude. But like, you know, when you start teaching, you also have to, I mean, you have to do it. So like, there's no doubt that you can work at it, right? I mean, you can, you know, you can think that you're lucky or you can think you're unlucky. Well, I decided to say that I'm the luckiest golfer there is. So,
but I think it's your duty as an outside counselor, as a caddy or a coach, it's your duty because, and it's not, you're not filling them full of shit. You're just seeing the non-emotional part.
It also matters where it's coming from too. If you can get a guy that you respect and you know has a level head and is in it for all the right reasons, tell you, hey man, you're being a dipshit. Start looking at it glass half full.
That's why I caddy for Matt Jones, and I grew up with Matt Jones, and he said it was tough to take. He goes, I'm going to be honest, it was tough to take here, you being so positive or optimistic, not unrealistic. I was like, mate, you can still get up and down. Let's keep moving on. He goes, it was tough to take hearing it from you because I play with you. You beat yourself down so bad for, you know, since we were kids. So that was interesting.
But it's great to caddy and then go back out and play some because, like, when you caddy, you're like, man, you see things in a completely different perspective.
But that's what you're there for.
Yeah.
If Chris Kirk or one of your players or Matt Every or Matt Jones hits a bad 6-iron, right? And the next guy's like, oh, I think it's a 7. You're like, no, I'll step in here. It's a 6. If you hit 100 in a row good on the range, this is going to be perfect. So they're like unemotional because they didn't hit the previous one well. Or for whatever reason, there's a hazard somewhere. But that's what we're there for, I really think. It's like, not to keep a real estate agent too. Like, people are emotional about selling or buying stuff. You pay someone for an unemotional advice or something like that.
So let's plug your real estate company here too while we're at it.
I'm wearing my real estate shirt.
And I'm wearing my UNC hat for Ramon today. So you played college golf at UNC.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? I know, do you have some buddies that did make it out on tour from those days?
It was an amazing experience. I love Chapel Hill. I was fortunate that I had a lot of opportunities.
Great coach, John Inman.
Yeah. Once I went to Chapel Hill, I met John Inman and the campus and the golf course. I was sold.
Finley.
Was Martin Urreta there with you?
He was right after. I mean, great player.
I played with both of them, yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, nobody's made it on tour. Nobody.
Ted Smith still trying.
Ted Smith still Dustin trying. Ray. That's right. Dustin Ray is probably, I mean.
He was the one that.
One of the best players.
Another one that legitimately Ramon should have got. Done the perfect putter a bit earlier, but the guy was a great putter, great short game, homemade, be like Abe Anser, but talked himself into being a bad putter, I think. Just not understanding statistics.
Amazing, amazing player. Like, he was, you know, first team All-American. I think he was 2 or 3 times.
Almost won the U.S. Amateur.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to do what you guys did, man.
Baron.
Making the PGA Tour.
It is fucking tough.
It is tough.
Look, it's easy and it's tough. It's an oxymoron, but it can be real easy and it can be like...
I have a bad taste in my mouth of the USAM. I just think the champions they get are overrated. Like, so overrated.
Not a fan of match play or?
Yeah, I mean, no.
No.
No. I'm not a fan of like crowning someone as a world beater if they win the US Amateur.
I mean, it's one of the best ways to get into the Masters for one of those guys. And
it's got history too. So I agree. Does it find the best player of the week? No.
When they started peeling off these guys to the live, that the recent USAM winners, I was just like, oh my, those guys are the ones that are getting the biggest.
It's a mix. There's been plenty of studs winning, obviously Tiger, but Ryan Moore, but there's also been guys that, you know, have just gotten lucky and shot 3 over and won their match where they would have legitimately lost to the other 15 guys in the final 16. So there's luck involved, but you know, there's history as well. But does it find the best winner that week? No.
Probably not. Do you have any good runs in the USAM?
No. Uh-huh. The only year that I qualified, I dislocated my shoulder.
Dude, what is up with you? I mean, Ramon, hey, well, yeah. You're just coming off of a pickleball injury too.
I know, man. You wouldn't believe. Like, I've had a lot of injuries, but
this guy with a racket in his hands is phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, it's better than a putter.
I don't know about
better that, than a putter in your hands.
I love tennis and pickleball is fun. It was the second time ever playing pickleball and tore my calf. So I was out of commission for
a while,
a month and a half. I mean, on a boot. And
are you ever going to play pickleball again? I think that's a sign.
Were you trying to get up to the kitchen? Is that what you were trying to do?
I mean, I didn't even know the rules. I was like, counting was so difficult. It was like, you know, the 1-1-1 and like, but you know, I was just getting into it. And
bet you're really good.
It was fun. We play paddle tennis in Spain. I think that would do really
well. They play it up north.
Do you play like member guest tennis tournaments and stuff?
I do. I mean, yeah.
I just got invited to one.
Did you? Well, but I mainly had the one. Where are you playing?
I'm playing Jack's Golf one. I played the other day. I haven't played in 10 years. I played with my buddy the other day. Thinks he's an athlete. And I just out-athleted him. Beat him 6-1. He comes up to the net. He's fucking drenched. He's like, I'm going in to sign us up for member guests right now. I was like, all right, I'm in.
the member guest tennis, they're fun.
Dude, your brand of tennis, though, Ramon, I always talk about how golf and tennis are so different when they handicap. I mean, you know, a chop can go out and beat a scratch handicapper because they're leveling the playing field. There's no way to level the playing field in tennis.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, if somebody's better than you at tennis, you're not going to beat them. In golf, I mean, golf is one of the beautiful things about golf is, I mean, right now there's so many good golfers. Anybody, like, you know, your scratch player at the club can beat a professional in any given day.
Manny Vajegas and Cuz, speaking of that, we used to play in college, Manny and I, we would play tennis, and he would always try and grease me. He was better than I was. He'd be like, I'll give you the doubles lines. And I'm like, that's not fucking going to do anything, dude. You're still going to wax me.
Let's race each other. Well, yes. You're faster. You're always going to be faster.
Right.
It's crazy that pickleball is not that much like, well, it is, as in, but you could have never played pickleball in your life, and in 2 minutes, you're good.
I think that's why it's doing so well. It's just like, yeah, anyone can play. And you can find a game, and you can kind of have fun. And you can play it as soft or as fast as you want to play it.
You need to be like 1% more athletic to play pickleball than cornhole.
It's close.
We got waxed by Jack and I, Cam Smith's buddy, who thought we were pretty good. We played this 70-year-old guy, well overweight, and his wife, and they beat us. Just really? You hit and you just waddle up to the kitchen, and it's just all about reflexes.
Well, you can't really go body shots either in pickleball because the ball's too, you know, it's not the same as tennis.
I don't know. I'll tell you when I play it again.
So I've also got here on my questions about you've had a couple guys that have won on tour and a couple guys that have contended in a major. What's that feeling like? I mean, because pulling for a guy that you're not only coaching but building that type of we mentality to get to the finish line.
I mean, majors are definitely different. They're fun. I remember the one that jumps up me is the one with Abraham Answer at Augusta the year of COVID, and the one that was in November. You know, there's no crowds, and you know, we're staying at a house about 7 minutes away from the golf course. And I remember it was like Sunday. We never watched TV the whole week. He was in the final group with playing with Dustin on Sunday. He was in the final group on Saturday, final group on Sunday. We were staying at the house, never watched TV all week. And I remember waking up on Sunday and I'm like, he's the Masters. I mean, he's got a chance to, I mean, he looks so comfortable. I'm like, he's going to win the Masters, right? So like, it was like, he was warming up at home. He was doing like the trainer was staying at the house as well. And he was doing all his warm up at home. And it was like, I'm like 75 minutes from tea time and we're still home. And I'm like,
anxious. I'm like, that's a cool story.
So like literally an hour before the tea time, we're still at the house. We drive, but I mean, you know, you park right next to the driving range and like we got there with 15 minutes.
And no traffic, no crowds. Yeah, you're good. Yeah.
But, you know, it was like an hour from, you know, from tea time and we're still at the house. I'm like, it didn't turn out. I mean, he had a great tournament.
Was Dale still on the back then or was it Benji? Yeah, Dale.
Yeah, Dale was still in the back.
That was the, when we light up the heater on the course and that one, I think, a famous photo.
And his white jumpsuit, just a guff hanging out.
Miss that guy.
I miss him too. He's coming back.
He'll be back.
He's coming back. Do you believe in UFOs? I've been watching this thing on Netflix. Listen, I don't believe in like Bigfoot and shit like that.
Segway.
Sell me on it.
Listen, if you watch these episodes on this new Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix,
all right,
and don't believe in UFOs after, I
don't care enough to believe. I don't care if they're real or not.
I mean, if we're out here, why not?
They're here. They're here. Do you believe in them though?
No, I'm going to watch this show.
I believe there's something out there, but I don't know and I don't. Keegan Bradley is well into that stuff.
Well versed in the extraterrestrial world.
No way. That checks out.
Vermonter.
Vermonter.
Are they?
They're big in the Great Lakes, actually.
Well, there's artifacts that Bob Lazar and all those guys, they've been on tons of high-rated podcasts and stuff. Joe Rogan.
There's military pilots. I mean, all kinds of guys. Yeah.
Maybe we can get one on the podcast.
All right.
Well, I think that's about enough, Ramon. Thanks for sitting down on the casting couch with us and learn a little bit more.
Well, thanks for having me. That was fun. You guys are doing great. Keep doing great things.
I don't think that couch has ever had that much charisma on it, ever.
I bring 1%. Ramon brings 99%.
Oh, thanks, man.
But no, very good having you on. We've known each other for 20 years. Most of us with San Jose and playing at UNC, and you're a good man. And I think it's crazy for people to know what you know, like just you're privy to that much stuff out there, which to us seems normal, but to the guy who's on the other side of the fence, hopefully they got some sort of insight into to what you do and especially the perfect putter. But do you have any idea how many units you've sold roughly?
I don't, but it's tens of thousands. It's crazy. Like, you know,
like right now you're still pumping. We're still going.
We're doing better than ever. I mean, golf, I mean, you can really see that golf is taking off and it's
the only thing like it on the market.
I'm telling you, it's TrackMan and Perfect Putter are like the two things that every tour guy's got.
That's special.
Every single day I have to bring the Perfect Putter out and set up some straight putts, some putts to break. And, you know, there's no chance you could be perfect without it.
I can't wait to get mine.
Comes with a lesson, I told you. Let's go.
Should have selected local pickup. All right, thanks, Ramon.